The Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you by The Contender, the game of presidential debate. Folks, hold on to your nuts, because we have decks that are being sent out as we speak. Everybody who backed on the Kickstarter should have it this week. If you don't, email me personally. If you are buying the deck and you pre-ordered it, you should have it this week. If you didn't do either of those things, head on over to thecontender.us. Presidential packs are the best deal you can get, and you got to do it this week if you want to get it for Christmas. It gets you the 500-card deck, the 40 custom topic buttons, and some extra buttons about this current presidential race just for laughs. Head on over to thecontender.us. And by everybody who backs us at patreon.com/jury, where you support not only this program, but also my politics podcast called Politics, Politics, Politics. We had our most amazing, best month ever in November, and we are on track to do the same in December. Thank you guys so much. You are the light of my life. Gentlemen, welcome to the Justin Robert Young Podcast. A lot of people have said a lot of things about this show. They've said, Justin, it's a podcast that I download on my phone or my computer. And I say, true. They say, Justin, this is a show where you talk by yourself almost exclusively. And I say, also true. But I then leer at that caveat and say, every once in a while, when I get extraordinarily lazy, I don't do a one-mic show, and instead, I rely on my closest and dearest of friends. Another thing that is very often said is, Justin, you don't do enough shows with Brian Brushwood. I think, finally, if we matched you two crazy kids up, we could finally see that chemistry explode, and so we're bringing him here to the Justin Robert Young Podcast. Brian?
Yeah.
You're here.
Yeah.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. Dude, I don't think I've had a better day than today in months. Today was an absolutely wonderful day, and I can't think of a better way to finish it than by playing second fiddle on your show. You know that I hold your program in extraordinarily high regard, and that you're able to do something I cannot do. I am a social vampire. I only derive my benefit, my strength, by taking from other people's electric sustenance.
Sure.
But you have the ability.
That's actually why I have this one shock white part of my beard.
You were fully gray. It was until you made a deal with Brian.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. I was going to go the other way. I thought it was jet black. And then I got the one rogue streak. But no, I like your way better. I had full Gandalf. And then the blossoming relationship between the two of us allowed the rest of it to turn pitch black.
Maybe so. But regardless, man, thanks for having me on, and I'm always happy to yell from the back.
So let's go ahead and we can talk about why I'm live in Austin. I'm not in the studio in Oakland, which is really just I am in prime position. I am in the version of the studio that I have recreated largely with Brian's help in Oakland. So it helps because I know how to work everything.
You're in the Mark I armor of Iron Man. You have to step down from your Mark VII.
So what can we say about why I'm in Austin?
We have been, and I think some of this is public. The nature of it is not. We've been pulled together to do a series of videos that involve us doing adventures. And there's a fantastic novel twist to this that that you can read on paper. And you're like, oh, yeah, no, I bet that's pretty cool. And then you experience it. You're like, this is really, really freaking rad. And I don't think I've seen anything like this, especially not with this level of experience and this level of character immersion. I'm really stoked about it.
So here's what we can say, and you will be able to put together if you follow at Schwood and at Justin R. Young for the next week. We are experiencing some of the most fun things that Austin has to offer.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And we are doing it in our own unique, fun way. So if you enjoy this show, if you enjoy Night Attack, if you enjoy weird things, then you are going to enjoy the product that we are putting out. And it is not just us being recorded doing this. There is another element. There is another twist that I think is going to be super rad, man.
Yeah. And in the meantime, man, the level of production on this project is pretty dope. I mean, it's, you know, it's, there's a number of projects that I've done. You know, I've done some television work, a couple of specials and a TV series. I've done, you know, some quirky YouTube things. I've done high production YouTube projects, low production YouTube projects. But in so many ways, what we're doing is such some next level experience. I could not be happier about the level of dedication they're bringing to this. It feels in many ways bigger than the TV show I did.
We've got a great crew and they're really dedicated, and there's a little bit of money behind this, and it is super great. And I think if what you're feeling is Justin and Brian have made their entire careers just being honest and talking about exactly what's on their mind, and it feels like we are tiptoeing through this because we don't want to say something that we can't take back because we're live on the internet, then congratulations. You could probably find Carmen Sandiego. You are an excellent detective, and you should put that to good use, which is why we will transition beyond what we are doing, except for the fact that we can talk about what we've already put out there on social media, which is what we did today.
And by the way, for those of you guys hungry for more, who feel like we're only teasing you, we promise very, very soon. We can't say when, but I would say in a shockingly short amount of time, you'll know everything.
It won't be that long. And the more people that are going to be brought in on this, the more we'll get the A-OK to talk about it, because it is not something that necessarily needs to be kept secret, except for television in general and the entertainment industry in general's full desire to control when things get announced.
Yes, exactly.
Like, that is a general, like that goes from Broadway theater to book publishing to television. Everybody who is paying for things wants to be the first one to tell it, which is their right, and it's super rad. Let's talk about what we did. We did two things today, all of which is out there on the soch, as the kids are saying. The first was a drum circle.
I'm sorry, Justin. It sounded like you and me, of our own volition, here in Austin, Texas, decided to hop into our vehicle, drive on down to soggy, wet, rainy Zilker Park, and join a drum circle.
What are your first impressions? Someone says drum circle. What's the first thing that pops into your mind?
Oh, a bunch of high people, all banging drums, and like old holdover hippies who are still pretending it's the 1960s and they're fighting against the man.
What have been your previous experiences with drum circles?
Man, my first drum circle was at Mystery School. the magic.
Oh, man. Can we talk about Mystery School? How much can we talk about Mystery School?
We can talk all the way about Mystery School. Congratulations.
We've now taken the off-ramp because anything. And we had an amazing day.
Yes.
There is a great version of this podcast where we just talk about what we did today. However, we are immediately going to take the first diversion to talk about Mystery School. how to describe Mystery School, Brian?
It is.
Actually, you want to know what? Pause there. Okay. Because you came into it like as somebody who was into the field. You understood some of the players before you were asked to go into it. I, on the other hand, first learned about Mystery School when I was thrown into the magic world as a journalist.
So that's a weirder thing, because you don't really care about the magic world, but you understand you need to learn all
this
stuff.
Nor do I know the players for whom are really the draw of Mystery School. So there are a couple a very, very famous, very, very well-revered magician, specifically Eugene Berger.
Yep.
And
Jeff McBride.
Jeff McBride.
Yep. And they have enough pull to bring in an all-star cast of some of Magic's greatest performers, like Dan Harlan. And when I was there, Kevin James, the guy who created some of the most popular effects, yeah. The stuff that
I mean, Magic, something to remember if you've never heard us talk about Magic before.
Yep.
Magic is 75 people.
That's right.
There are only 75 people in the entirety of the Magic industry.
But if you're pretty good, everyone knows you as one of those 75, and like, you're famous. You are
And everyone
super
knows everybody. I've said this a million times. It is absolutely true. Do you want to find out if a magician's lying? Ask him if he knows another magician. If he says no, he's lying.
Yeah.
Like, that's an absolute fact. There is zero membrane between a kid who learned magic last week and does a trick on his webcam to David Copperfield and David Blaine.
That's correct.
They know his first, last,
in fact,
and middle name.
If you want the fastest way to get through 6 degrees of separation to anyone, just connect to a magician and know that you have a direct line to teleport to any other magician.
Absolutely.
It's a two-way portal. So in this world...
So all of a sudden, here's all I know about Mystery School.
Yeah.
Mystery School happens once a summer.
Mm-hmm.
It has a tremendous alumni list.
Nowadays he does a different iteration of it, but it used to be a real focus on the mystery side of things.
Well, no, I just mean like many famous people have gone there.
Once a summer. Used to be once a summer.
Now it's
past tense. Like they've retired Mystery School. Now he just does his master classes.
Oh,
which is
gotcha.
A different animal.
Oh, wait, I didn't know it had gone away. Okay.
Yeah.
So it is a great focus on the spirituality of magic.
It depends.
Would that be a safe way? And not, okay. And again, this is not necessarily a religious orthodoxy or anything, but magic in general is a very rigorous performance, right?
Yeah.
So, and then there's the true magic.
Well, okay, there's magic with a K, right?
So people who wear snake rings and sew their own clothes.
People who put in false fangs and call themselves vampires and introduce in polite company like, yes, my name is Vlad, I am a vampire.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, what does that mean? And you're like, it means that I draw upon the forces of darkness and then tell you your card was the Ace of Spades. So here's the thing. You've got one circle of magicians and magic and sleight of hand, people who know they're faking and their job is to entertain. And this is in the late 90s at the height of the world's greatest magic specials. Everything's purple lights and sequins, and
booming.
Everyone plays the exact booming. Same techno soundtrack. And then you've got this other group, Burning Man, before Burning Man was a thing.
Ah,
right?
Yeah.
So picture Burning Man.
I guess I had never really tied those two together because I knew about Mystery School far before I knew about Burning Man.
Yes. Well, and that's how I found out about Burning Man was because there was one kid who was just like, there's this thing. It's called Burning Man. It goes out in the desert. You got to go. It's life changing. And I'm like, all right, y'all want to get high out there. And so now meanwhile, what you have Brian Brushwood, you know, a budding skeptic at the tender age of 20.
Sure.
No, I guess I was 22. And somebody almost done with college, getting ready to move on with his life, and he wants to have access to some of the most fantastic teachers and entertainers and magic creators out there.
Absolutely. And that for which guaranteed, you know, because again, Jeff McBride, who is the principal mind behind Mystery School, has connections to literally everybody.
Yep.
He has a great reputation in the magic industry. Not easy to do. He has maintained friendships with so many people. And he brings in the best of the best.
Absolutely, right? And so I'm excited about that aspect. I knew there was another circle, that the magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K, the folks who, you know, collect valerian root and burn it on a Friday and whisper an incantation.
Exactly.
And then
keep
watch
track of the phases of the moon.
Exactly.
And
he also brings in these interesting I guess, philosophers, because you have folks like Robert Neal, who's one of the most brilliant minds of our day. You know, his topological studies, and you know, he's a hardcore skeptic who, you know, who loves the idea of what it means, what the stories behind astrology mean, and so on. And he finds meaning in stories, in storytelling. It was a wonderful thing that pushed me so far out of my comfort zone, insofar as the first thing we all did was gather for a drum circle.
Because the world is all vibration.
That's correct. That's correct.
We just need to get on the same beat. So this is where the spirituality element comes in.
Yes.
That creativity, because this is very much, and I think Mystery School is something that it is very easy to be cynical about. And it is very easy to laugh at.
Yeah.
And believe you me, I have done both. But the one thing that it takes extraordinarily seriously is creativity. And the idea of where does creativity come from? How do you get in a spot where creativity comes alive? Now, that is something I will always infinitely give it credit for. The methods for which they feel is necessary to draw out creativity is one of those things that even, like, because it is very Bay Area, it is very Burning Man, it is very that kind of crowd. It's just one of those things where it's like, how much of this is us just getting ready to get ready to be creative? How much of this is like, what if you just created something and then went to your person next to you and be like, oh, what do you think of this? Like, which way would get you the better final result?
Well, and that's the funny part, right? That's kind of the real magic, if it could be said, about Mystery School, is that there's a phase where you perform for each other and everybody gives criticism, and, you know, constructive, helpful criticism,
sure.
Right? And so I showed up.
You suck.
Yeah, right?
You suck. You suck dicks. You suck.
And so as a matter of fact, I don't know if I ever told you this, Michael Carbonaro and I were in that class together. That was the first time of
the Carbonaro effect.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, we reconnected years later. And in fact, I don't know if I told you this, before Michael got his first, cause he got the Carbonaro effect because he was doing the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
He was doing store clerk magician.
Yeah. The 7-Eleven magician.
Before he did that, He Skyped with me for a couple hours and we jammed on ideas and he made some video right before the first one came out and he even mentions, he was nice enough to say, hey, thanks so much, Brian Brushwood, for those ideas. And
oh,
so
nice.
On. Yeah. But it's like, you know, even though, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't get to take credit for the snowball rolling downhill, but to be part of that first, you know, group that helped push was really exciting. But he did an absolutely amazing, it was dead quiet because you do get a very strong sense of appreciation for the arts because some of the people performing are not magicians. You get storytellers, you get musicians, you know, you get somebody who writes a poem up there. But Michael Carbonaro's thing was kind of a mime thing where it was a guy starting off looking in a mirror. It's all done in pantomime, so it's dead silent the whole time.
Oh wait, so he did? Is this what I'm thinking? His shaving cream?
No. This is pre-shaving cream, as a matter of fact. This is what he did was he's pantomiming looking in the mirror, and he takes a deck of cards and he's doing this fancy magic stuff. And at some point, he looks at his arm. And he kind of, you know, touches it and feels it and he just, you know, is dissatisfied with it. And he steps behind a curtain and you know, he's making the sounds with his mouth. You hear like, and he walks out with this RoboCop arm. And he's like, oh, yeah. And, he, you know, he's flexing and there's these great beats where you're like, oh, man, he's really excited about how he's self-improved or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he does some other stuff and I forget the moves that lead him to it. But, you know, he's doing some magic and is better than it was before and he's super stoked. And then he reaches another limitation. It's like his, you know, he stumbles on his leg or something, right? Goes back behind the curtain, does it.
Robo leg.
Exactly. And then, again hits another limitation and then goes back. And this one, you know, again, this is the great thing about Mystery School is you present your ideas while they're still raw. So it took a while for him to reemerge from the curtain again.
Yeah.
But when he did, he was head to toe covered in robot parts and including, you know, a robot head. And he goes to pick up the cards, and now because his fingers are covered and he's full robot, he can't do the simple thing that brought him joy to begin with.
Gotcha.
The cards fumble, it goes down, and then this is the real magic part. This is the part I get literal goosebumps now thinking about.
Yeah.
He goes down on one knee, he reaches in the back of his head, and he pulls something, and a real flash pot goes off in the back of this thing's skull.
So he has disconnected himself.
And then
himself.
He's deactivated himself, and he pantomimes, you know, the dead robot swing or whatever, and it's just chilling. You watch this dude, you know, chase his dream and commit suicide at the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of high-concept magic that was just so wonderful to experience.
Which is great when it's done well.
Sure. Okay. And now, if you're getting that.
I'm just saying.
Look, I took.
That kind of magic. High risk.
Sure.
High reward.
Sure, sure.
Right? And when it's that 10%, because Carbonero's done, he has become
huge. Bigger than me.
For doing similar stuff. He's got another great thing, what I was referring to with the shaving cream. He's got this amazing act that basically has him with lights and just shaping his skull with like a bunch of shaving cream and like just looks amazing.
Just type in Michael Carbonero shaving cream and you will be blown away.
Sleight of hand, the likes of which you've never seen. He's got another act where him and his and I don't know if it was his boyfriend or whatever, but he does a razor blade routine where he makes out with his boyfriend at the end. Who had swallowed the string, and like they kind of reverse Lady of the Tramp, have all of the string and razor blades tied together, which is a great version of that effect. He's amazing. When it's not good, which is 90% of it, because again,
by the way,
risk,
this
reward.
Is the point. Real quick, time out. Yeah. I took a solemn oath to not share. Several aspects of Mystery School, and so I will obey that oath, but I will allow you to conjecture to your heart's content.
Okay. Oh, is one of the oaths you won't talk shit about people who went to Mystery School?
I can neither confirm nor deny that at this time.
Understood.
Sorry, what I mean is Dominus Ominous, Astrologicus.
Yeah, exactly.
Phases of the Moonicus.
Then let me just say this. It's supposed to be 90-10.
Yes.
It's supposed to be. Like, this is high concept magic that is excellent both in story, in form, and in execution. 90% of it should be unwatchable because you are striving to something that is more than just... Because for anything that you want to be cynical and look side-eye at something like Mystery School, at least they're not just like, no, yeah, go ahead and just play... The B.O.B. song, I Got the Magic in Me, and do the same flourishing routine that people have done since 1971, right? Because that is the rest of magic.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is a safe space to be wildly inventive
and
wildly experimental. And when it's good, like you said, it's very, very good. And I forget how
and
the rest of that
is,
poem
and
goes.
When it is bad, Brian can't talk about it because he took an oath 15 years ago. Here's the only other thing I'll say about Mystery School.
Right.
I once knew a dude who lived up the ridge from Mystery School, or from Jeff McBride's house, where they do Mystery School.
Oh, so wow. What, this is up in the, when it was in the Northeast?
No, this is in Vegas.
Okay, all right.
And so he would be able to look from his backyard down into Jeff McBride's backyard, and he would often hear sounds of drum circles. And the one thing that he told me is... He awakes one morning, goes out to his backyard to see a parade of all the Mystery School people with flags, and they are just chanting over and over and over again, "We are the magicians. We entertain the world," as if they're holding their own tiny little protest against apathy for everybody else around the planet who would look side-eyed against magicians.
Dominus Ominous. Phases of the Moonicus. Werewolves are Realicus.
Oh, man. So people are mentioning Burning Man here in the chat room. Have you ever been to Burning Man?
No, but I have to imagine it's just like Mystery School, only without so many famous magicians.
What do you think is the big appeal there? I mean, like, or the big, if you wanted to follow
I'll tell
that,
you what,
that Mystery
if
School
you want it-
high... Like what would have brought you to Burning Man?
I'll tell you what, it's another vector because Burning Man appears to be Dragon Con with fewer licensed properties and with more drugs. Like, the same thing that draws people to Dragon Con is what draws them to Burning Man. Because I'll tell
certainly
you,
community,
how far off is that experience in the Marriott? That weird, surrealist, postmodern, delightful nightmare where, and granted, the drug of choice is everyone's doing alcohol.
Yes.
A few people are doing something more. But you know, to look over and see the four bad kids from Cobra Kai running into Walter Sobchak from The Big Lebowski, and here's Five Silence, and over here's, you know, Deadpool and so on. It's
and then there's
wonderful.
Deadpool, and then he runs into Deadpool, and then there's a bunch of Deadpools there, and they're like, hey man, I got a Deadpool over there, you want to meet him?
By the way, my favorite costume from the last 2 years was somebody walking around with a hood on and a sign that says, welcome to Night Vale, stay away from the dog park.
Oh really?
Yeah, it was pretty
That's
good
great.
At any rate, but it's that same impulse. It's like you spend your year creating so that you can show off your surrealist stuff. Now in this case, it's a surrealist, you know, tinged with a geek culture at Dragon Con. But lacking that, let's say you're a fan of William William S. Burroughs.
William N. Sonoma.
No.
William
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. What am I thinking of?
Oh, you're thinking of William Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. William Shakespeare.
No, you're thinking
Naked
of
Lunch.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas was Edgar,
Hunter S. Thompson.
Edgar,
thank you.
Right.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson.
So let's say that's the kind of stuff that floats your boat.
The
you
S
want to create
stands for Shakespeare.
Let's say you wanted to create a Salvador Dali was your jam, right? You could create a surrealist nightmare version of your great, because I'm sure there's some bad art about, you know, screaming, birthing, primal, you know, things in there. But also it's daring and out there. You know, there's some not great costumes at Dragon Con. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So we got there from the allure of Burning Man.
Right. I would say it's the same allure,
gotcha.
Just
that,
with
that
a different flavor.
You to Dragon Con.
Yeah, exactly.
If Dragon Con moved 2 weeks later, would you have an interest in going to Burning Man?
Absolutely. 100%.
That is something that would be on your list.
Absolutely. It wouldn't be the social thing that Dragon Con is precious because it's the day of the year we get to reach out and touch our fans, right? And give them hugs and actually experience them face to face.
Well, and it's like we live in a very plugged into pop culture, play the same games, read the same books, watch the same movies kind of society that we have self-selected. And Dragon Con is where everybody meets there.
Right. And we all speak the same language. Now, Burning Man will be a difficult thing for me because there's a lot of language I don't speak. I don't speak the drum circle very, very well. I don't speak the dancing. I don't speak the drug culture nearly as well.
Yeah.
And so, I feel much more at home at Dragon Con, but I think that's why I would dig Burning Man, is because it would feel so different.
So if you're at Burning Man, have we ever had a general conversation about like drugs and drug culture? Like let's say you're at Burning Man.
Yeah.
Let's, in a scenario.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on this project. All of a sudden, Cy Newhouse, the founder of the Newhouse School of Public Communications, swings down and says, "Hey, bros, I'm Cy Newhouse. You want to go to Burning Man?" And we get on his yacht and we sail to Burning Man, which I don't even know how that's possible. We're there. All of a sudden, people are offering you cornucopia of mind-altering substances. What is just the first thing that goes through your mind?
I don't want here to be my first time. Like, for all of it. I took a long time till I finally had sex. And if it wasn't the person I was going to marry, it was going to be someone that I knew was special enough that I would never regret this being my first time. I could see, you know, not knowing the effects of all those drugs, I wouldn't want my first time to be at Burning Man.
Yeah.
With some person I just, you know, signed.
So you would say
whoever.
You don't have to name the drugs that you have done, but like.
Oh, no. Like, well, okay. I mean, really, I mean, it's like, you know, booze and at my grandmother's funeral in my late 20s was the first time I had tried pot. That's it. That's everything else wide open.
Gotcha. So when would be the first time you'd like to do coke? Like, you could imagine it for yourself. Again, You want to be that pretty princess
who
gives your maidenhood to the Prince Charming that you will eventually call your husband. So what is that magical first time that you do cocaine? And I presume it's not, like many of us, on the hood of your friend's Camaro at 4 o'clock in the morning when you've been drinking all night.
I cannot tell you a factual story.
Sure.
But I can tell a likely totally made up story that a friend of mine claims is true.
Okay.
There are reasons to wonder why he would make this up, but
that
people make up
Barack Obama.
All right, yeah. I was working on a project and Barack Obama was there.
Well,
did I already tell this story?
I'm Barack Obama and I'm about to be a part of a story.
The story I heard, and again, there's a million reasons. There's a lot of really good reasons someone would make this story up.
Sure.
So it very likely is completely fake.
Let me be clear. I'm not going to lie about this. I'm going to tell a true and honest story.
This person had never, Barack Obama, done cocaine.
I've never done cocaine, and I'm honest about that.
He came out of the bathroom at a Hollywood party. It is a public bathroom. He was in the shitter part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he
at a restaurant.
I guess something like that. That's how I imagine. I imagine fluorescent lights.
Gotcha. And he sees at an Arby's, and I just walked out of the bathroom.
He walks out and sees two guys clearly doing blow.
Yeah,
you can tell by the snippet or whatever.
Well, hello, sir, and other sir. I can notice you're doing blow.
This is a tricky part here. The story goes that it was an actor. Have I not told you this story?
No. Just tell me the type of actor. Type of movies, like romantic movies, action movies.
Seems like maybe he's a very roguish individual.
Gotcha.
So
like he would equip a dagger. A 1-1 dagger for his 2-mana hero power.
Well, specifically, actually, what he would do is he would destroy your weapon and deal cards for how much durability is left.
Yeah.
Do you not know which card I'm talking about?
No.
I'll give you a hint. It's the only card based on an act. They'll figure
gotcha.
It out.
Gotcha. I think we're there.
It seems like this is the kind of actor who maybe got a part that was meant for Tom Selleck at some
point. Sure. Yes. No. I think we got it.
At any rate,
if this restaurant were on an airplane.
Yeah.
And somebody were acting unruly.
Yeah.
He would either throw them off and say, no ticket.
Oh, sure,
or
sure.
Throw them off and say, get off my plane.
At any rate.
Yeah. That kind of actor.
That kind of actor.
Generally.
Yeah.
That kind of actor. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Abigail Breslin.
So anyway, Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah,
he walks out and there's Hunter S. Thompson.
Exactly.
And he's
I loved you in Regarding Henry.
and as courtesy, he was like, oh, would you like, you know, I assume that's a thing that happens. If anyone walks in on you doing blow, it's just like that's your one move. Is you're like, oh, would you like some?
I feel like also I've watched too many movies that they're gonna say something like, hey man, you care to partake?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Like you got to say it in a weird way.
And this very likely fictional story.
Gotcha. So he walks out
this
in
guy,
a Hollywood restaurant. Barack Obama sees an actor who may or may not be in the highest grossing movie of all time.
All of a sudden, I'm getting uncomfortable telling this friend story.
Let's barrel through it.
Okay. So, but basically, Barack Obama thinks, if there's ever going to be a first time,
it's with
this person right now. And it seems to be like that. I don't know that I could fault him. But luckily, that situation has not and very likely will never happen.
So, okay. So, again, we're building up this fantasy scenario for
you. Yeah, sure.
You could select the restaurant and the two actors.
Sure.
In that story.
Sure.
For you to have your magical first time doing coke.
Sure, sure.
What's the restaurant? And what are the two actors?
All right, dude. What's funny?
And also, I want everybody here. Also, email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Send me your restaurant and your two actors that you would like
and
to
by
do
the
coke
way,
with. If you've already done coke once, you've ruined your life already and you don't get to email in.
It has to be heroin. It has to be something outside of your comfort
exactly.
zone.
Exactly.
So it's like if you've done coke, then you go to heroin. If you've
send
done
us your dream if you've drug done, scenarios if to justinrobertyoung@gmail.com.
If you've done heroin, you have to go with crocodile. Like, you have to say, what would be the two actors in the restaurant that
I
you
would do
crocodile?
I would do an ether rag.
yeah, man. If
with
I,
Angela Lansbury and the dog from Frasier.
If I walked into the restaurant's the tricky one. Okay.
All right. Set it up.
I kind of want to go with the Magic Castle.
Okay, that's fine. They got a restaurant.
All right.
Here we go. And so you walk in. What do you tell the ghost who plays the piano to play on your way in?
You're like, play White Lines.
And then the uncomfortable 5 seconds while the ghost goes and puts in the thing. Yeah. Bum, bum. Bum 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 bum
bum bum bum bum. Man, if I walked out, I'm trying to think of two people that it wouldn't happen with, but unfortunately, the two I'm thinking of
might be guys who would do coke,
or almost certainly have one of which I heard, both of which I've heard admit on the air, and their friends. In my imaginations, the knee jerk response was Dan Harmon and Jack Black. Which I'm almost certain that's actually
gotcha.
Happened. Is that Dan
like
Dan
with
Hart-
each other?
Yeah,
because yeah. they're friends.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
they're obvious cokeheads.
Well, I mean, by their own admission on
sure.
the air, on
no,
two different
I mean, listen,
shows.
Like they are people for whom are Hollywood folks living Hollywood fast Hollywood lives. You know,
but
having a great
both,
time.
First of all, it should be said that both of them couched it as something they did in the past, which I have no
sure.
reason to doubt.
Yeah. So, and then, this is your dream scenario, Dan Harmon. Jack Black.
Now,
okay?
Keep in mind, this is not my dream scenario. This is
what?
The scenario where I likely would be powerless to say no. That's the
yes.
That's
okay.
the reality.
Wait, is that separate? Do you have another dream
oh,
about
dude, my,
doing coke
okay,
with?
In my dream.
Oh, okay.
And this will most certainly not happen.
Sure. Ooh, it's a dream.
I don't know.
Dare to dream, Bri.
Jesus. Never mind.
No.
I'm bailing out.
You can't go that far.
All right, the problem is I'd have to sell it as a specific fantasy, and I was meaning as a general joke. Like, if I walked out, and it was my wife and some super hot other chick, and she's like, we want to do blow and have sex with you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I like the last part of that, so if that's the first part I have to play.
So you're like, yes. In But that's like, that's not a coke dream.
I know.
That's a sex dream.
See? That's what
yeah.
I'm saying. That's
yeah.
You said that's the dream as opposed to the harsh reality.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I love how, I feel like this means that like all of the best versions of all of your dreams like are sex dreams.
That
so
involve
like,
my wife.
But yeah, so it's like, all right, what is the greatest academic dream of your life? Well, I become tenured at Harvard.
Yeah.
And then my wife's like, you can fuck any of these other professors with me right now.
Like, by the way, people,
what's your greatest culinary dream?
People,
I make the turducken, and then my wife's like, you need to fuck me and this turducken at the same time.
By the way, I love this idea of people introducing themselves with just saying the name of the restaurant, the two people. They're like, hello, I'm Balloon Knots, Showbiz Pizza, George R. R. Martin, and Weird Al. Jackie Hearn saying, wait, I lost it already. Oh, dude, there's
be right there if you want to.
Oh, wait, like Gamble's Gamble, Five Guys Burgers, George Will, and Hulk Hogan.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
You're gonna do this cocaine.
Hey, by the way, brother, do you partake?
man, I'll tell you what, I feel like to do.
Oh, shit, no, John Stossel. Yeah, I walk out as John Stossel.
You're just teeing up the voice now.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to. But I'm just saying, like, how awesomely weird would that be? It's John
Stossel
and Jack Black.
And
then,
Jack Black.
Yeah. And he's like, hot. Oh.
Woo, Stossel, let's go.
I'm just going to do a little flicker to go.
Ah!
lot of people think that John Stossel doesn't do coke. Maybe he's a bit of a square. Maybe having an Emmy on your resume precludes you from partaking.
Would you like to partake? The government doesn't think so.
The government jails over 10,000 people a day for drug-related offenses.
Oh, yeah, dude, that would be pretty insane.
That would be pretty good. All right.
What's yours?
I feel like, man. All right. I would say it would definitely be. Do bars count? I'm asking about my own scenario, but for you to be, make a referee's call. Do bars count?
Yeah. Especially if it's a nameable bar.
I feel like yes. All right. So a nameable, a cool, hip, awesome bar, Bennigan's. And by Bennigan's, I mean, I understand that they're all closed down, so it would be an abandoned Bennigan's.
Okay, all right.
So I've broken into an abandoned Bennigan's, and as I go to the bathroom, which clearly doesn't work anymore because no one's been paying the plumbing bills, I walk out, and as if it's haunted, and there is Mel Brooks and Stephen King.
Oh my God! It's Stephen King. he's like, I gave it up, but this is haunted cocaine. I got it from Bar Harbor. yeah, it's pretty good.
and Mel Brooks is just like, oh, okay, yep, yep. Like,
he's like, you only live once.
and then we do coke, and then I'm like, how does this fantasy end? And Stephen King goes, I don't know, a tentacle? Aliens! And then he just runs through a window. And that's the last anyone sees.
As always happens, his son Joe Hill comes in and picks up the pieces. I mean, like, there's an actual ending in here. Hold on. Did I say his brother or his son? I said his son,
his
right?
His son. Okay, yeah, good. His son, Joe Hill, who, by the way, spitting image of the old man. I don't think I'd ever seen a picture of Joe Hill, like, aside from when he was younger. The older he gets, the more it's just like, because like the more he goes into the age that you were raised seeing Stephen King's, like at that age on book covers.
Yeah, sure.
The more you're like, oh my Lord, I feel like in a Stephen King story, Stephen King cloned, he had sex with himself to create Joe Hill. That's how close they look in looks. Although that'd be more of a Dean Koontz premise. Brian?
Yeah.
This is normally the time that we read emails from people. We have had a ton of awesome memes that have gone through. I'm not going to read the emails now. I'm going to save them for the next One Mic show where we can actually kind of delve into them a little bit more. But one of the recurring elements that people have been very excited about writing in about, it's a segment we call X Gonna Give It To You.
Oh, shoot.
EX.
Okay. Oh, your X.
Like, terrible stories of people that have been in terrible relationships. Because for whatever reason, every once in a while we get these things on the jury show where, like, because it's an email-heavy show, they'll be just like, every once in a while we just hit a rich vein of, like, things that people want to email in about. This has been extraordinarily rich. People are very, very excited to share terrible stories of ex-boyfriends and girlfriends. Now, I know we don't need to get into, I know that you have a few stories about exes that we've touched on a little bit on the Night Attack show. We don't need to delve back into that. But when you've been consoling friends about terrible broken relationships, is there anything that you can dredge up from your past in dealing with people with bad poisoned relationships that like you can't, like people can't help but going back? Because this is what I want you to give just another voice, because all people hear on this show is people relating to me stories of terrible relationships, and I just do my best Shia LaBeouf of like, get away.
Yeah.
Run.
Right, yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
So, and all the advice is the exact same. I say the same thing over and over and over again. The drama's not worth it. The issues aren't worth it. There's nothing in there, in that relationship, that you will not fix by, you know, having your own self-esteem be in a better place. But I feel like I need another voice on this. I need somebody else to give that same advice. So when you've been dealing with your friends in these relationships, what kind of advice do you give them?
It's not even something I created. Man, I must have read it in a crappy newspaper column 25, 28 years ago, because I was a kid. I was like 14, and it stuck with me, and I didn't see the wisdom in it until 6 years later. But it said, the best breakup is the Montana breakup.
Oh, I like this. What is this?
It's where one of you moves to Montana. Like, that is it. It's just end it and make them an unperson. Remove that element from your life. And I will say, because here's the problem. You get hurt until finally you decide to get angry. When you get angry, that's the first phase. Good. You're angry. You know what you should do now that you're angry? You should do nothing that involves contacting that person ever again. Yeah. Now that you're angry, you take that distorted supervillain version of this poisonous person that didn't value you for the wonderful butterfly that you actually are, and you bottle it up. You put that in a bottle in your mind, and you preserve it, right? You dip it in, fill it full of formaldehyde, and for the rest of your life, there's going to be this one poisonous item in your brain, but luckily it's in a bottle, preserved for all of history. Now you can go down whenever you need motivation, whenever you got a half-finished term paper, whenever you got a project, whenever you got an audition, and you're not sure if you have what it takes to go out there and try it. Take a trip down your hall of supervillains, and look, they're all preserved on ice. They're all safe, but you can look them in the eye and say, fuck you, I'm going for it. And you let that be your driving factor for the rest of your life. I mean, until you find somebody wonderful, and then you let their love float
you. Sure.
But secretly in the back of your mind, you preserve a little bit of anger.
Now, here's the only thing that I think we would probably part ways on. Is there a point in which you let the sepia-toned version of the old relationship back in? Because I would always say, that's the healthier thing. Like I am all for that. That poison is the medicine to separate you, right? But you don't want to be on that medicine forever. Eventually, you want to say, hey, let's think the best of my past, and let's think the best of that person. There's no need to make them an unperson forever. But you, the way you're looking, you're looking at me like, no, like that might be a great ideal, but some folks,
it's
better to live with that person being Dracula.
I am very, very lucky, very, very fortunate in that I have a very short shelf of supervillains because, again, I blow it off. I love everybody. I trust everybody. There are a few people.
Specifically, he blows it off with Dan Harmon and Jack Black.
That's right. And John Stossel. I mean, it's
a lot of people.
We're at the Magic Castle. They say anything is possible here.
After all, how about we just do this one magic trick? Ta-da!
There are a few people that I put on the shelf, and then I later, and I mean decades later, decided to let back into my life.
Yeah.
One is the story you know.
Yeah.
Of a personal relationship that, and it was a minor thing. I think we are largely healed.
Cool.
Totally cool.
Good.
There was a very awkward moment that I felt like, years and years and years after the fact, I was taken advantage of retroactively, and I felt like it was unfair and it stung. And I was like, well, what did you expect? You opened the door, you opened the bottle and let a version of this person back in your life.
Right? Absolutely.
The other was very poisonous.
You let them back in and they were Dracula. You invited them back into your life.
Yeah.
And that was it. Now, to be fair, what I'm saying is not let them back into your life. Just think of them.
Right. I should not have even thought it. Like there was a few pleasant exchanges with this person after over a decade of silence.
Silence. Then there was silence.
There was cordial exchanges, and I ended up regretting even those because I found out that this person adopted a fake Twitter identity, went about using his personal knowledge of me to stir shit up and to twist a knife in exactly the parts, all while acting like someone else and while maintaining cordial relations with me.
Like he was super cool with you and then like needling you in soft spots that he knew to be soft spots.
That's correct.
Either because by knowing your personality or knowing the new conversations
right.
that you were having.
And I found out like 2 years after the fact, I got a phone call from someone saying like, hey, you know so-and-so on Twitter? I was like, who is this? What are you talking about? He's like, well, he said bad stuff about you. So I thought he'd be, you know, because he says bad stuff about me. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, well, anyway, I called a guy on Twitter and blah, blah, blah. We found out who it is. I was like, I don't care. Who is this? He goes, sure. he goes that person is person from your yeah. life a decade ago. And I was like, oh, MF-er. Yeah. And I was like, poison. Put that guy on the shelf. He's an unperson. He doesn't exist. He's
just toxic. I mean, he is just a toxic human being. And that person is Barack Obama.
Not my fault. I walked out and there was a superhero of my childhood. he offered me blood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on the Jury Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe us on iTunes, Stitcher, and anywhere else that you listen to the show. If you'd like to email in, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. My guest this week was Brian Brushwood. Brian at Schwood on Twitter. Anything else?
No, man. That's it. Soon to be a co-host of one Justin Robert Young on something besides the Fantastic Night Attack podcast.
Folks, if you find yourself at Mystery School, if you find yourself at Burning Man wondering whether or not you should do those drugs, if you find yourself looking Indiana Jones dead in the eye and saying, yes, I do partake, then you, my friend, need to remember that my name is Justin Robert Young, he's Brian Brushwood, and we are asking you, please, don't die!
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.